I might think that I might spend less than normal simply because it's COVID period and they wouldn't want to be moving about and visiting places and things like that. The other thing, though, and the reason why I asked that question, because I think it was probably a gamble the government was taking in terms of bringing in the welcome stampers and possibility of bringing COVID with them. And now we have a shutdown. The Prime Minister said that we are losing $150 million a month. So against that background, if we are not getting $150 million coming in, why should we put ourselves at risk to lose $150 million? No. I think that might be considered a backward step, don't you?
I'm not a public health expert, but my understanding may be I understand, I hear where you're coming from, but I think you might be commingling issues. The two are not really related, in my view. Whether you would say that virus only travel with welcome stampers, it could be a Beijing time back, it could be me, anybody returning, it could be, it have nothing to do with welcome stampers. I think what you're saying makes sense, in fact, in terms of making sure that we have adequate protocols at port of entry to mitigate effects, but this ain't got nothing to do whether it's a welcome stamp or not. The protocols that exist to anybody, minister, me, you, anybody coming home, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
So I will not link the two.
Okay, let me just ask this one question, though, because I know how the standard goes. I know you're offering a helping hand to the hoteliers, right? And it seems pretty lofty, too. What are you doing for the manufacturers in terms of encouraging the hoteliers to invest in the manufacturers? Because traditionally, hoteliers don't invest in manufacturing. They prefer to buy the products ready done from China or Mexico or somewhere else. I notice you're throwing a lot of money at the hoteliers, but I don't hear you all at all lobbying for us as manufacturers to get them to spend money with us. So I'll put down, I'll let you answer that one.
All right. No, you know, I like to be very careful with my words. I can't say to you that government is throwing money at hoteliers. No. COVID has impacted the tourism sector, was the first initial point of impact, the tourism sector. And because of that, we saw a huge follow in terms of employment, et cetera, in that sector. Government has prepared various packages and relief in different areas. One is the best program related to hotels and other areas. In order, the key here, listen, and in all intents and purposes, hotels, if we can get workers back in hotels, if we can prepare hotels for opening up, I told you that the world will open up, we got to be in a position. If a hotel closed, it's much more difficult to reopen it. If it closed, you got your toilets going off, you got all kinds of things happening. It makes sense, and it's not train money. You can't throw money when you go and repair a house, your house, or you do things. They're investing in their processes. There's opportunity for them to bring work staff on and train them to do a better delivery of product. There's no throwing money, it's assistance provided that our friends, my friends, your friend, everyone who work in the sector can find employment. So we're not doing that. In terms of the manufacturing sector, I know at the moment the economic team and the government is looking at various ways in which we can assist the manufacturing sector through looking at the protocols, etc. I am not 100% up to fair what the latest stuff we're doing there, but rest assured, we are doing everything at sectoral levels in which we can assist businesses and all that. But if you have some recommendations, please put them forward, and we can all work together.
Beyond recommendations, Dr. Greenidge, one of the things I want to input here, because I pick up the overtone with the questions when it comes to manufacturing, agriculture, tourism all the time, there's somewhat of an economic civil war between these sectors in my mind. And I think that when I was growing up, you heard the phrase, tourism is our business, let's play our part. And I think that was excellent, because to some extent, you know, servitude versus, and the whole discussion was what it was like back then. And it was the main part we felt, let me talk about me, because I know about me, is that when you see tourists, you smile and shit, right? And I think that one of the failings that we had back then that we bring to know is the education of the Barbadian public in terms of what tourism is and what it means. Because for a lot of people, they think that you're throwing all these money to accommodate these people from overseas, these white people, these tourists. And a lot of the times I hear people talking, it is like us versus tourism. As someone, as an economist, and you look at the books, I'm sure you see it very differently. You understand that tourism brings in the money. Tourism helps to pay. Tourism accounts for 60% of the reserves in terms of our foreign. We need the foreign exchange. You know that. Does the average Barbadian know that? There's always seem like there's people. People call me daily crying. I can't say, give me money to the hotels. I think that Barbadians need to be educated in terms of the importance of tourism economically. And even on a greater level, how can they get involved? How can they get a stake in the pipe?
Absolutely great. I don't think I added much more to what you just said. I mean, tourism employs about 5% of our economic output, both directly and indirectly. And they produce both foreign exchange, over 60%. I think what the court is also referring to is tighter linkages between the hoteliers and the hotels, the tourism hotel sector, and manufacturing, agriculture, where the output from these industries flowed into some into the hotel industries. In every country, that's areas where you try to tighten up. Of course, we have to make sure it's business, right? If you want a hotel and you can guarantee that you will get some yams and others of a certain quality every Tuesday, then you will not import. But if you can't, then you may want to do that. So we have to look at those linkages and make sure that those inter-industry linkages have improved as much as possible. So I take the caller's point on that one.
Right. Excellent. Let's take another call. Brastak Sunday, good morning and welcome to the program.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning and welcome.
How is your family today?
Everybody's doing A-OK for now, sir. Thanks for asking.
Including the kids?
I tell you, right, the kids are good and the children are better.
We're good. I have four questions for Mr. Greenwich or Dr. Greenwich. I am more than confused. I am so confused, my head giddy. Now, when this government came to office, Barbados was in a deep financial crisis. And it can be said, and I would agree, that the last administration played a big part in it. And talking about the non-collection of value-added tax on businesses. That tax was written off by this government. I heard Councilor Franklin came on radio on one of these Barstats programs and said that one company alone owed $25 million. Now, I don't got much pumpkin sense, but I'm not a total idiot. I would think that if I am in financial trouble and someone owes me money, I shouldn't even use myself as an example, but someone owes me money, I would think that the sensible thing to do is to go after that person to recover the money that is owed, not write off debt in a time of crisis. And having done that, because they write off the debt, it does not mean that we are out of the crisis, we are still in. What you're going to do now is burden the taxpayers by putting all kinds of taxes on them. I also understand that taking that out of people's money and not paying is a crime, is a criminal act. My question is, I don't know if he can answer it, but instead of asking, why didn't government or what reason government had to write off that debt?
All right, so this is the first question, right? So we deal with it one at a time. We're looking at the companies who would have owed a lot of money and they're writing off a debt. Can you speak to that?
Great. I thank the caller for his question. You know, I've been part of this economic team from the get-go. And the caller is right. There's a large portion of taxes owed by Barbadians businesses to the Barbados Revenue Authority. But what I'm not aware of, and he quote persons I can't answer, is I'm not aware of government writing off anything to anyone. I know we have put
in the process over at least before the start of COVID, run a program where we, I mean, all along, Babbage Revenue Authority have been actively going after persons. But in truth be told, sometimes some of these are old and they don't, you know, you may not have the money to pay itself, but there's no, we've been going after, Babbage Revenue Authority have been going after persons, number one. And number two, have also been putting a plan in place that had intended to roll out where, listen, if a man owe you $100, and you know you owe your $100, but because of situations, you may not be able to you pay your $100, you have to offer him the same way we government were able to do different measures and offer its creditors plans. So, remember that restructuring? We talked about reducing our debt. In some cases, suppliers, we offer them 85 cents on a dollar. So, if you want to wait the world to get your money, because the type we would pay you eventually, or if you want now, you can get accept 85 cents on a dollar.
It's a compromise settlement, they call it.
Right. That was what we did from government owing suppliers to in some cases. Remember, we had a whole different options in terms of restructuring our debt. And one of the options too were if you willing to accept 85 cents on a dollar now, or you could wait 3 or 4 years. In some cases, it made sense to do that, right? So I'm saying Revenue Authority and the government it was in the process of rolling something like that. For those who owe the government, where you get a different payment options come in, we talk and things like that. But I do not, and honestly, I'm not aware, and I've been part of the government team from the get-go, of any writing off or anything to any businesses. So unfortunately, Carl, I can't thank if you support what you say in that regard. But the bottom line is that I think the most important thing, door caller, that you said is, yes, there's an active program to get persons to repair. A lot of persons who are government, who taxes, to get them to repair that. But what I'll do, and thank you, all understand that focusing on that will have shifted during COVID, because government only got so much resource and we had to respond and try to deal with COVID, etc. So, but that's still part of the cards. Eventually, we have to put a program to get the government money through it.
But Mr. Greenwich, we know, and a lot of people know, that people have this idea once they're old government, they don't have to pay. And it isn't only in that, it's house rent and all of that. And what people doesn't realize, I just said that, no, well, I would even put it more simpler. If you owe $25 and you at least pay $5, that shows you're making an effort. But then you don't pay this month, you don't pay next month, obviously it's going to accumulate. And I see things happen only in government. I don't hear. What that means to that government, in some ways, allow these things to happen for whatever reason, I don't know. The next question is, lots of people are also dropped thousands, which suggests to me, yes, some of them might have been reemployed elsewhere, but with the loss of jobs, that means that less revenue is coming in, because less people are not spending, right? The first caller wanted to know how much money was made under the welcome stamp. What I want to know, how much was lost or how much was spent under the same welcome stamp? Because with COVID, obviously there had to be restrictions. Thank you
again, thank you for your question. So first of all, you can't lose money on the welcome stamp, because I mean, if a person don't come, you haven't spent anything bringing them. I think, but let me speak to your bigger question, which is quite correct. Because of the impact of COVID on the economy and the loss in jobs and the resulting high increase in unemployment, of course, government revenues were impacted. In fact, we estimate that we lose about what we were expecting in terms of revenues in 2020 and what we get, we actually got, we lose close about $500 million in revenues. And at the same time, government had to step up on the expenditure side to cope with the fallout and supplies and quarantine center and all that. So we lost about $500 million. And this year is shaping up, again, that relative to what we were expecting at the end of December this year, we may lose another $300-400 million in revenues. So your point is well taken, that this is having a significant impact on government's revenues. But government focus, and that is why
I started by talking about the buffers and how we prepare, because, you know, we always say you got to save for a rainy day, and there's more than one way to save for a rainy day. You can save by a rainy day by putting down some money in the kitty, or you can fix your house so when the weather comes, you don't wash off the roof and drown you. Both is saving. So we fix the economy, and we prepare buffers on the BERT program so that now it is not only raining, it's pouring cat piss and dog pepper, and we are able to respond accordingly. So I take your point, caller, and the impact on revenues are quite significant.
All right, let's take another caller. Brass Stats, good morning and welcome.
Hello, good morning.
Hi, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Corey and Mr. Dr. Greenwich, is it? Hello?
Yes, you were just cutting out a bit there, but go ahead, we can hear you now.
Yes, good morning, Dr. Greenwich. Dr. Greenwich, I was listening to you very carefully, and unfortunately, all I'm hearing is tourism. It seems to me that there is no other vision for Barbados. Perhaps you may have one, and we'd like to hear if that is so. But this industry has brought us grief, heavy reliance on imports, increased pressure on our carrying capacity and our present infrastructure, all in the face of increasing arrivals and government being seduced into making deals with vulture investors seeking to pay no taxes, duties, or levies. So the question to you, sir, are there any alternatives to the tourism? And if there are so, I'd like to hear about them. Thank you.
Thank you for your call. I have said this before, and I will say it again, and this is my personal view. And Corey, then what Marietta just explained a bit. Tourism is our main economic activity at the moment. It's not our only one. It contributes about 40% of the economy and over 60% of our foreign reserves. And it's high place to find something to replace that more of foreign reserve. It doesn't mean that we should only be relying on tourism, and we do not only rely on tourism. We have to diversify, but not diversify where people talk about replace. I think you got to get your car straight. We have to widen the economic basis, which is what the government and what we are focusing on. You widen within tourism and you widen outside of tourism. This is why you see all the, in terms of agriculture, the tremendous expansion in agriculture, even in the face of tourism of COVID, that expansion in agriculture reflects a number of initiatives coming with the Ministry of Agriculture, including moving from bulk sugar to direct consumption, etc., to widen that base under the umbrella of food security, not to replace tourism, because that can't happen. Listen, reality, Barbados small, right? So you can plant every house and plant every piece of your ground with agriculture, you still can't make 1/10 for the whole in foreign reserves on tourism. Yeah, they have to face the reality of small size. So you diversify smartly, diversify into energy, reduce energy costs through PVC panels, all sort of thing. You diversify in manufacturing in key areas where you got a site advantage. We're doing these things, tech things. But the focus should not be thinking about replacing tourism, because you ask me how you do it, I will ask you how you will do it. What it is you want to find to replace. We have to diversify within the tourism sector and also the bases and others. So a previous caller talked about agriculture and manufacturing, tighter linkages to tourism sector, so the whole thing, that widens that base and we reduce our import bill. Tighter linkages to agriculture so that the thing, in fact, the 60,000 care packages show that we can rely on, to some degree, on agricultural food security, because that is not a real bulk of the produce came from. The other point I should make is a misnomer. Whether you into tourism, agriculture, you are a small, open economy, and imports will always be a large part of your bill. So we face reality and be smart about how we do it. And that's how I will look at it. Right? So that's my take on it.
If the call is not there, I want to go to the messages now. This is the brass, that's part now, the counter, the trust, So, Dr. Greenidge, let's start with the VAT write-offs. Article was just sent here from the first, I can't believe this is the first of August 2019, and it talked about the VAT debt write-off as amendments passed. I'll just read a bit of it. It says here, the Labour Party administration has kept its mini-budget pledge made shortly after coming to power, writing off outstanding value-added debt from the first 4 years and waive the penalties and arrears. Further down, it speaks to following further consultation with the Barbados Revenue Authority, it was determined that we would write off on paid taxes from 1996 to 2000 and waive the penalties and interest incurred on arrears that started from 2001 to December 2017. So back in last year, August, no, not last year, year before August in 2019, there was some writing off on paid taxes, particularly from 1996 to 2000. And there was the waiver of penalties and interest on it from 2001 to 2017. So when you put that in context with your previous response.
No, you're absolutely correct. I was not aware in terms of, I didn't recall that. But it makes sense, no? Because business exists. You can, a lot of business that exists in 1996, 1997, 1998 still don't exist today. Getting your VAT from them may not be even possible. They don't, they're going to business, people pass away. So it doesn't make sense carrying on your books if you know there's no realistic upper chance for you getting back. So that's fine.
All right. The other one is this one is from a fellow economist, Carlos Fort. A regular contributor here. He's saying, according to the Central Bank of Barbados, the most recent report, the cake, as Dr. Greenidge calls it, in fact grew between 2008 and 18. It indeed grew by a commendable 2.4 in 2015 and 2.6 in 2016. He said in 2015, nominal GDP, the cake, was 9.4 billion, and in 2018, it was 10.2 billion. Surely the 2018 result cannot be attributed to the policies of the government that took office mid-2018. So I think he is challenging your assertion that we didn't have growth between 2008 to 2018. He's saying that we actually grew from 9.4 to 10.2. Between that period, particularly in 2015 and 16. How do you respond?
Thanks, Corey. So there's 2 points you're making there. Again, I told you when we look at the nominal value, mm-hmm. in 2000, you said between 2008?
Yeah, and 2018.
2018 is a structure, it has changed, we recall. I mean, everybody got their opinion. In 2018,
but everybody can't have the facts. We want the facts.
Right. We had the BRRRR program starting around July, and there were significant policy changes in 2018. I look at the BRRRR at the end of 2017. Mm-hmm. Okay? And between 2008 and 2017, the economy went from 9.56 in 2008, 9.5, and in 2017, seems that we have slight revision in numbers, 9.9. So a marginal amount. But remember, the economy, I always say on average, if you like average growth on the nominal side is 0.5% increase. When you add up, when you go year to year, 0.5. And the real is minus 0.5. The bottom line is, Corey, let me abstract from, a decimal point here, it's all numbers that you're trying to estimate. The point is, between 2008 and 2017, the economy stagnated. Mm-hmm. We started at 9.56, and we are at 9.9. I ended 2020, I end 2019, just before COVID, we had 10.4 billion, a slight increase.
Right. He go on to say that the Stewart administration left the public finances in a mess, but he's saying don't embellish to make a point. And this is where I like when economists talk economics and not politics, because for me, if we stick to the facts, everything goes okay. But when you look at the analysis of the facts and so on, sometimes this is where you go off. You start to create a narrative as opposed to looking at the facts. So I'll leave that one right there and I'll go on.
The one thing we're saying on that, Corey, just one thing, in terms of how we look at the numbers, right? 2008, we had a global financial crisis, which makes a natural starting point because prior to that, the economy had grown 14 years, 12 out of 14 years. 2008 is a natural because that's the global financial crisis. And after that, you just look at the when the economy starts to change form and structure. At the end of 2017, in 2018 is when all the indicators start to change. I ain't interested, I ain't talking about who is in charge or who will do what, I ain't attribute nothing to nobody. All the time you look at 2018 and 2017. 2018, when you look at it, is a different year. Things change around. Debt change start to look differently. The fiscal start to look differently. Growth start to look differently. I ain't attributing the blame to nobody. I'm just saying these are how the economic numbers look like. I don't know who left what for who, nothing. So I tell you what the reserves were or what they are.
With that said, we'll take a break. This is Brad Stack Sunday in association with Williams Industries Incorporated. Williams Metals, choose us for your building needs at Williams Metals. We got what you need. We are the leaders in building materials. We offer lumber, cement, concrete, copper, aluminium, and all type of metals.